Nuketown Radioactive number 83 for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010. Good news, everyone. Nuketown Radioactive did not see its shadow and has emerged from its winter hiatus with an episode that looks at my new gaming room, runs down the video games I've been playing, and talks about the comic book companies that you should be following on Twitter. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and this is the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. And you'd be excused for thinking that this podcast had gone from occasional to infrequent to just outright dead. But, well, what can I say? We're back. It took me, 3 months? About 3 months to get back behind the microphone. I have lots of great excuses, but most of them just come down to one really big one, which I'm actually sitting in right now, and that is my brand spanking new game room. Yes, folks, there will be photos up on Flickr, but the game room is done. The holy grail of geekdom, at least in my life, has been completed, and it is looking beautiful. Now, for those of you who may not have heard about the trials and tribulations of my game room, it was really in need of a makeover. My wife and I moved into our house about 10 years ago, and, you know, the game room is on the third floor, and the third floor was finished in so much as it had carpet and stuff, but we never really done anything with it. And we had some spots that needed to be touched up and repaired, and the carpet was just completely beat to heck. And, you know, things just weren't really nice. They just weren't refined, if you would. It always felt kind of cramped and just not quite complete. And moreover, I had a lot of stuff up here. This is my game room, and it doubles as my office. But, you know, I had all these D&D books and all these Star Wars books and all my other role-playing games and a whole bunch of board games and just all the stuff that goes with it. And it was just kind of scattered. I had a bookshelf, but it was just completely packed to the gills, and it wasn't a very nice bookshelf, and it didn't really fit everything well. So it was kind of one of those things where, you know, there's just a lot of stuff. It wasn't well organized. The room itself just wasn't really, you know, I don't know. It was lacking a certain something. And I guess that something was really, really refinement. You know, I guess when you get to a certain age, you just want your stuff to look nice, you know? And the game room has been the game room for, I don't know, the last 5 or 6 years, ever since I got kicked out of the old game room because we needed it for my daughter when my son was born. And we just never really had the time to pause and say, okay, let's make the third floor the way we really want it to look. Well, we've done it. It took us, I think about 4 months to actually get to the point where this is completed. We started back in November, and we've repainted all of the rooms. We put in new carpeting. We put in new overhead lighting, which is really beautiful, and dimmable, which is even better for game night, because as one of my friends pointed out, the game room is now perfect for both Star Wars or D&D with some nice bright light. It's perfect for miniatures painting because we can get the lights really nice and bright, or we can just dim them and play a little Call of Cthulhu, maybe a little Delta Green. But in any case, so those are just huge improvements. But I think aside from the new paint and the new carpet, which certainly make a huge impact on the room, I think the thing that has helped the most are the new bookshelves. I now have a bunch of IKEA bookshelves that we went and got. I have Billy the bookcase, one large Billy the bookcase, and then two smaller Billies, and then a CD/DVD rack, and that fills one corner of my room, and that actually holds the lion's share of my role-playing game collection. Actually, it's kind of funny. I had forgotten that I had had as many role-playing game books packed away in the basement as I do. And while I haven't pulled all of them out, I think there's still a couple of second edition D&D books down there, most of them are up, and it's cool. You know, I mean, it's not something that I get to play these games a lot. I mean, aside from Star Wars, but you know, it's one of those things where it's a collection, actually. It's something I've been doing since I was in grade school. And it's just awesome to be able to sit here and look at my bookshelves and just kind of see the years of my hobby stretched out before me. And it's just really fun. I don't know. It fills my heart with geeky joy to be sitting in my office and looking at all my cool gaming stuff. Now, the other thing that's nice is now these shelves also accommodate all of my board games, and I have a fairly good selection of board games. And we're not just talking about, you know, your regular board games like Life and Monopoly. Actually, those are all kid games and downstairs. But I have things like Arkham Horror, Risk 2210, you know, the various Catan games and Carcassonne and that kind of stuff. And now all that stuff has a place to live upstairs. My HeroClix collection is actually somewhat manageable now. I have space to put all those things. My Dragon magazines and Dungeon magazines and now Kobold Quarterly have a place to live, and they look beautiful sitting on their shelves. And my daughter now has a nice little cubbyhole where she can work on her own computer, because I got out my old Power Mac G4 and set up a table for her. And so it's in a nice little nook, and once I get a monitor for it, she's actually going to be able to work up here in her own area while I work in mine. And let's see, we got a nice 2x4 cubicle bookshelf, which is going to hold a new 26-inch LCD TV once I have a chance to actually go out and buy it. That will be the crowning achievement on the game room, I think. We had an old, you know, kind of CRT-based TV up here, and it took up a lot of space. It had a terrible picture, and it was just really clunky. It was on this, like, moving table that we could push back and forth between the game room and my wife's office, and it was just, it was really awkward, and one good push would probably have knocked it over. But now we're going to get a spiffy new TV. This will actually be my first HD TV, and my plan is that I'm going to hook up my Xbox 360 on the third floor, and might hook up the old Nintendo 64, and I'll be able to come up here and play on the 360. This is important because as my kids have gotten older, they're taking a greater interest in my video games. And some of the games that I want to play, like, say, Dragon Age Origins, or, well, heck, even Mass Effect 2, which has a surprising amount of cursing in it, these are games I really can't play around the kids. Yet, if I wait for them to go to bed, I can't play my games until probably like 10 o'clock at night or something like that, you know. And it's not just the kids, it's also my wife. You know, if she wants to hang out downstairs and watch TV, well, that means I can't watch the 360. So if I wait until the kids are in bed and she's in bed, then it's, you know, 10:30 at night, and I'm tired. So having the 360 on the third floor means that I could always retreat up to the game room and, well, just play up here. Now, we'll see how it goes. I mean, the advantage to having it downstairs is it's really easy to pick up and play, say, you know, Magic the Gathering or some other game that isn't really, like, hyper-violent or something that the kids can be around. But, you know, I think that this approach could actually work pretty well. I think the other nice thing about it is when my kids have game night, you know, I can always move the Wii up here, or if they want to play on the Nintendo 64, they can do that. And, you know, they'll be able to do their thing. I'll be able to work on my computer, and, man, it will be sweet. Now, there are a few things that still need to be done. I have to put up posters in the game room. And to be honest, I haven't quite figured out exactly what I want to put up here. You know, one of the things about the old game room, before we remodeled, was that I had a gazillion posters. Now, this room on my third floor has kind of curved ceilings. It's in what would normally, I guess, it's kind of like would have been in like an unfinished attic or something like that. So it's got probably, I guess, 7-foot ceilings, but it also has like curved ceilings where the actual roof is above me. So, you know, I had these posters that I got from DC Comics, which were really cool. They were kind of like these thin banner posters that were going along the wall. And I had a bunch of stuff on the walls, like an Empire Strikes Back poster. I had some Dragon posters, you know, kind of like your standard game room fare. And I think that what I've learned is that the more posters you have up, the more cluttered the room feels. It actually makes the room feel a little bit claustrophobic when you have all this stuff on the walls. So now that we've repainted and things are looking pretty sharp, I want to put up just a kind of few posters. I want to get some nice frames and just kind of swap out the posters as needed. So have fewer posters, but, you know, nicer posters, posters that kind of complement the color scheme. And I know, this doesn't sound all that nerdy to actually be talking about color schemes, but I got to tell you, folks, the room looks really really good. And when it looks this good, you want it to keep looking good. So I have a couple of ideas. There's the variant Return of the Jedi poster from the 10th anniversary, which has this nice red background with Darth Vader's helmet and then Luke and Vader battling in the foreground with a nice, you know, lightsaber duel. That's one I'm thinking of. There's an awesome poster of the Serenity solar system that I'd love to get. I'm not quite sure where I'd put it. And there's a really nice kind of banner vintage Star Wars poster. It's like a horizontal poster instead of a vertical one, and it looks pretty nice, and I could see that putting that in one corner. But really, I'm trying to avoid going overboard, just because, like I say, the more stuff that you add, I think the more cluttered the room feels. And this is actually the other lesson that I've learned from working on the game room, and it's this. The more furniture you have in a room, the more cluttered it feels. Now, this is one of those things, like, you sit down and you watch one of these design shows on TV, you know, like on Lifetime or whatever, or was it TLC? I guess TLC is the one that actually has most of the design shows, or HDTV. And, you know, occasionally my wife and I will hang out on Saturdays and we'll be watching these crazy design shows, right? But I think one of the points that they make, and it is actually true, is the more furniture you have in a room, the more crowded it feels. And we played in the game room for the first time last Friday, and I think all the guys commented that the room just felt bigger. And it's really not any bigger than it was, but I think the fact that there's so much less furniture in here, and the furniture that is in here is being used in an optimal way, really just makes the room feel bigger. And I'm now on a quest to keep things from getting cluttered again, which brings me to my comic book collection. I have a huge comic book collection. I've been collecting comic books since my junior year of high school, so that's what, 1989, I guess. And while I haven't been collecting as furiously as I did, you know, back when I was in high school and early college, I still have managed to acquire a goodly number of comic book boxes. I think for long boxes, I have something like 12 long boxes. So I have reached the point where I actually need to consolidate. I have a good number of comics that I'll probably never read again. They might have been limited series, they might have been stuff that I just picked up because I might have been interested in it at the time, but, you know, I'm not really all that into it anymore. These are things like Fantastic Four, Iron Man. You know, they're not bad comics, it's just that when it comes right down to it, I'm more interested in the X-Men. And I'm thinking, in the interest of space, I need to consolidate down more to my core collection. Now, I'm not going to throw out all my comic books, but I think I'm going to get rid of a bunch of, like, you know, these crazy Marvel one-shots that I have from the late 80s and 90s that, you know, they're not really good comics to begin with. I think I bought them because I was into the whole, oh, wow, look, it's a limited series kind of thing. And, you know, some of these might have tangentially related to a character that I was interested in at the time. So I think a bunch of those are going to be going. And, you know, the other thing that I'd like to do is make some of the books that I really enjoyed a little more accessible. So things like the Dark Empire series for Star Wars from Dark Horse Comics from the 90s. Really awesome Alien series from the 90s, which is, I have this beautiful black and white graphic novel of the original Alien series that that Dark Horse did that I'd love to dig out, because honestly all of my friends should read it and I don't know that they've had a chance to. I'd also like to get out things like particular runs of comics that I've enjoyed. So my goal is to find those comics, kind of flag them, put them into a short box that I can easily get to lend to my friends or just reread myself, and get rid of a bunch of these comics that are really, to be honest, just taking up space. And then I'll figure out how to store them in this room. I have space where I can put boxes, and when I post the pictures, you'll see how I'm handling it right now. But net-net, I got way too many freaking comics. Now, the larger project isn't completed yet. My wife's still working on her office/studio, but that's kind of a work in progress because she's trying to figure out how to best use the space. So I think we have some more IKEA bookshelves in our future that will hopefully hold all of her fabric samples and stuff like that. But she's really trying to get a feel for how she can best use her own space, because I have a lot of gaming stuff, but she has a huge amount of craft and jewelry stuff that is all part of her business. So she has a bigger challenge, I think, in trying to organize her stuff. All of my stuff can easily fit on a bookshelf. We're also slowly recovering the rest of the house. There was a bunch of stuff that was up here, including, you know, these random pieces of furniture that we don't need anymore or we're not using anymore. And we have a bunch of stuff that kind of was crammed down in our room, in our bedroom for the longest time, that, you know, we're slowly unearthing that stuff and finding a place for it. But aside from that, we're in pretty good shape on the home improvement front, which, you know, ultimately is what allows me to record podcasts for you.
Hi, this is Fraser.
This is Chris.
This is Chuck.
This is David.
From the Accidental Survivors, and you're listening to Nuketown Radioactive.
So, speaking of the game room, I've had a lot of cool new video games to play. Back in, I guess, November and December, the big game I was playing was Dragon Age Origins, which unfortunately I haven't been able to finish yet. There's a review of it up on Nuketown, but I really enjoyed this game. The graphics weren't all that great, but man, it was pretty cool. I really liked the role-playing aspects of it. I really liked kind of the open-endedness of the world, for one, although you kind of only go to certain places in it. But I love the dialogues. I loved how there were no easy moral choices. The core could be a little bit over the top, but as a game, it was enjoyable. It really reminded me of the old Knights of the Old Republic games that I enjoyed so much, which is unsurprising since it came from BioWare. Now, the other BioWare role-playing game that I'm playing right now is Mass Effect 2, which is the sequel to BioWare science fiction RPG. And I really enjoyed the first Mass Effect, but I was frustrated with its inventory management system and the awkward load times in elevators. With the new version, they've totally ditched the inventory management system, and they've also gotten rid of the elevator load times. I'm glad to see the load times being addressed in a much more elegant way. It's just kind of, you know, some simple splash screens, but that's fine with me. The inventory management, I'm surprisingly kind of annoyed with. It doesn't feel as much like an RPG when you don't have an inventory to manage. I know this is silly, but it really gives you the option to customize your character, to have a couple of different weapons they're choosing from, a couple of different sets of armor that you're choosing from. And they give you some degree of control over this. You can switch between types of weapons when you're on your ship, and you can change the appearance of your armor, but it's really not the same. It really feels more like a loadout from some sort of modern warfare game or something like that than, say, a traditional RPG. And I really ended up missing that part, which, I don't know, it just kind of surprised me because I didn't think it would bother me as much when I first started playing the game. The levels themselves are fairly linear, which is a little annoying. You know, you kind of come to this area, you progress through a path with which there are a couple of different forks, but not really. They all end up going to the same place. And then when you complete your objective, boom, the game is over. That section is over, and you return to your ship. And there's this like kind of scoring screen that shows up at the end, and it feels very, I don't know, a little bit jarring. It feels like you've just completed like a micro mission for Modern Warfare, not that you're part of a larger role-playing game. You know, it feels very contrived in an episodic sort of way. Like you're getting these little snapshots of the story instead of kind of one naturally flowing into the next. That having been said, I am enjoying the game. I think that the biotics, which are the kind of like force-like powers, are much more enjoyable in this game. I'm really enjoying the combat system and the duck and cover system. I think I've grown used to the way that you control your characters. Like, you can't assume direct control of them like you can in Dragon Age and Knights of the Old Republic, but I think in general, I love the dialogue that you can have with other characters and, you know, the conversations that arise, but, you know, the game is definitely much less of an RPG and much more of a shooter than you might think. In conventional RPG news, my gaming group returned to Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition by playing Revenge of the Giants. This was actually, I think, back in November when we did this. I was going to be reviewing it for the Tome podcast and wanted to try and actually play the game before I was on the show. And, you know, it was interesting. This was the first time I've ever played Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition where I wasn't the Dungeon Master. I was actually a player, and I was playing an Avenger character, which is very kind of... I think it's the only lone wolf class within D&D 4E, where you can really kind of do your own thing, and it doesn't compel you to work together as a team. The adventure itself went fairly well. It was really combat heavy. I think we had gotten into like 3 encounters before we even had the chance for some serious role playing. And by that point, we had actually finished the adventure for the day. I think we're going to go back to it. I know that there's kind of a low level but sustained level of interest in Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition in my group. And I'm hoping that we can return to, you know, Revenge of the Giants for another kind of all Saturday game or something like that in the coming months. It's the kind of thing that's kind of hard to sustain, because, you know, carving out a Saturday to do this can be something of a challenge. But I like 4E enough to want to kind of keep my finger in it. And I really had a lot of fun playing it as a player. I think that as a player, it didn't seem like I had as much to manage. I was able to just kind of keep all my power cards in front of me. And while it reminded me quite a lot of playing Magic the Gathering, you know, once I got my head around this as kind of like a card-based role-playing game than as a conventional D&D role-playing game, I think it went a lot better for me. There was also some sad gaming news back in January when Wizards of the Coast announced that it wasn't renewing its license for Star Wars for its role-playing games and miniature games. And... you know, I felt kind of torn about it. On the one hand, you know, I'm sad to see the game go. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, my group has had a blast with it. It's really filled a void that was left by Dungeons & Dragons. You know, we played D&D for years and years and years and kind of got to the end of 3.5, and half the group was really frustrated with it, and the other half really still loved it. But, you know, everybody agreed that there were certain problems, and Star Wars has really fixed a lot of the problems that we were encountering. And now this game, you know, the one Wizards game that we were still playing on a weekly basis, they went and canceled on us. But I think the plus side is that it's really going out on top. It's been a really solid game. We've had a lot of fun with it. And they've released, let's see, the core rulebook and 13 supplements for it. And the game never reached the point where, you know, there was this proliferation of source books that, you know, we're giving you power creep, that we're slowly escalating things, that, you know, we're starting to have contradictory rules. You know, this kind of stuff we saw at the end of 2nd edition D&D and 3rd edition D&D. Star Wars was able to avoid that. And, you know, I think they're actually going out in a pretty good spot. I mean, the only source book that they didn't release that I think folks would love to have seen was the New Jedi Order source book. But you can kind of get there from here using the Rebellion Era one and the Legacy Era one. But aside from that, you know, the good news for me, I think, as a GM, is I now have the ability to kind of say, okay, yes, here are these core books. These are the ones that we're using. You know, I only have these 13 books that I'm not going to need to be concerned about, which is pretty cool. And there is so much material that, you know, my Knights of the Old Republic campaign could easily run for another 2 years. And I could easily play Star Wars for as long as we're interested in it. You know, I could see going another 3 to 4 years, 5 years, just based on the content that I have and the books that I already own. So I don't know that we'll run that long, but it's nice to know that I have the material to do it. And I think the thing about Star Wars is that it's got staying power. I mean, there's still people playing the old West End Games version of Star Wars. And, you know, that's been out of print since, what, the early 2000s, the late 1990s, I guess it was the late 1990s, because I think West End lost the license just before The Phantom Menace came out. So I am optimistic that we won't have any problems recruiting for Star Wars. I think we're also helped by the fact that Saga was a pretty solid rule set. There's a lot of people who are really into it, and I think that, you know, it's one of those games that you'll always be able to find players for. So the only thing I want to do now is buy the last two source books that I need to get, which are the Scavenger's Guide to Droid, Scavenger's Guide to Droids, I think that's what it is, and then the Unknown Regions, which I guess the Unknown Regions comes out in April, and then I want to get another copy of the core rulebook, just because mine is a little bit beaten up, and the core rulebook that's out there now actually has some of the errata built into it, so that would just be nice to have. But aside from that, you know, like I say, I'm sad to see it go, but on the other hand, I'm glad that it went out on top. And I just have to say thank you, Roddy Thompson, who is the lead developer for Star Wars, for doing such a fantastic job.
If you need help with your master plan, check out rpgpodcast.com.
So I thought for Netheads this week I'd steal from one of my Follow Friday posts on Nuketown about comic companies on Twitter. There are a bunch that are out there, and for the most part, I think they're worth following. There's one exception to that, but we'll get into that in a minute. Anyway, the first one I think that you should definitely check out if you're a Marvel fan is at Marvel and at Agent underscore M, because these are people who really, really, really get it. Marvel has a nice dialogue going back and forth with their fans. They run the occasional contest, the occasional poll, that kind of stuff, and they do a pretty good job of mixing up the interactive elements with the news elements, which is a hard balance to strike. Agent M is just awesome. I mean, he tweets about his life, he tweets about working at Marvel, and, you know, it's cool in so much as you're being able to see into, you know, the bullpen at Marvel and get a sense for how things are produced and, you know, get a little sneak peeks of things that are coming down the pipe, and, you know, that's just pretty cool. I really enjoy both of these Twitter accounts. Dark Horse Comics is also another good one. They publish Star Wars Legacy. They gave Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic an awesome run, and they're going to be launching a new Star Wars title, I think, later this year. And again, they do a pretty good mix of news and contests and, you know, interaction with followers, which is always nice to see. Now, DC Nation, I gotta say, their actual official Twitter account is DC underscore Nation. And, you know, if all you want is a steady stream of DC Comics news, then hey, that's fine. But don't expect anybody to talk back to you, because they really do not reply to anything. I think they're only following a handful of people, and I mean, honestly, it's been disappointing. I'm not a huge DC fan, but I like to read Batman. I branch out into the occasional Green Lantern and Superman from, you know, here and there. And it would just really be nice to see them being a little less corporate and a little bit more interactive. Interestingly enough, one of their imprints, Wildstorm, is actually better at this than than DC Comics themselves. They're still, you know, have a lot of kind of, you know, just newsy type stuff, but they do take the time to reply to fans. They've been doing a lot of things like, you know, having announcements like about the new Mass Effect comic. I think they did a Gears of War comic. They seem to be doing a lot of media tie-ins lately. But they'll also do things like link to, you know, the latest pencils, drawings of cover art or inside art for an upcoming comic, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think they're worth checking out, especially if you're into any of the Wildstorm titles.
SFFaudio.com, the sound of tomorrow. Explore the limitless worlds of the imagination with SFFaudio.com. Reviews and features, audiobooks, online audio, full cast audio drama and radio theater. The ultimate source for news from the world of science fiction and fantasy audio, brought to you by the most trusted team in the business. SFFaudio.com. The future never sounded so good.
So that'll about do it for this episode of Nuketown Radioactive. I know it's been a long time, and, well, I'm sad to see y'all go again, but what can I say, guys? At some point, you gotta end the podcast. I'm hoping that I'll get the next show out before, say, I don't know, June, but, you know, don't hold me to it. This spring is looking to be really crazy busy. But in any case, if you would like to give me feedback on the show or send me encouragement, because, you know, the more encouragement I get, the more likely I am to release a new podcast, you can email me at nuketown@gmail.com, or you could follow me on Twitter, where my username is NukeHavoc. Links to all this good stuff will be in the show notes at nuketown.com.